us.
We're a subcommittee.
Wasn't ready to open the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. Two issues. Let's do, if we could, the work session on 211 and then hear about 550. These are two school finance formula related bills, both I think very straightforward and hopefully at least the first one easy to do, and then the second one we'll just hear about, and if there's the will of the committee to move forward, we'll schedule it for the next week. Open a work session on Senate Bill 211. Steve, I think we got the amendments back.
Mr. Chair, yes, you have amendments, Senate Bill 211-1. What that amendment does is to take out all of the sections of the bill that reference increasing the percent of students that are eligible for an extra weight as IEP students from 11 to 12.5%. So the committee talked about excluding that and keeping the part in the bill that increases the amount of funds for the high-cost disability grants from $12 million to $18 million per year. So that's what the amendment is doing. It's deleting pages 3 through 5 and all of the references to the 12.5% and keeping the language that increases the $12 million to $18 million a year for the high-cost disability grants.
Okay. You want a motion?
Let me get a nod from, yes, please.
Move the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 211.
Senator Rowe has moved the dash one amendments. Dash ones?
Yes.
Dash one amendments to Senate Bill 211. Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Senator Monroe.
Move Senate Bill 211 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Monroe has moved 211 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections to that motion. So ordered. Senator Monroe.
You want me to carry it?
Taking an interest in the formula.
I have great interest in anything to do with education. So
Get you a twofer. Okay. This is the Steve Meyer Day. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 550, and this is a new bill that sunsets a couple items outside the school finance formula. Steve.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Bill 550 makes one change to the school equalization formula. It eliminates the additional weights for small schools in the calculation of the state school fund grant for the districts. So you have language that deletes section ORS 327.077, which I believe you have a copy of, the language that describes the qualification for small schools and the calculation of additional weight. So that language is repealed by the bill, and it also deletes the language that says the small school weight is to be considered part of the weighted student count.
And before we go to Representative Dallum,
one additional thing, that the timing of this is such that it wouldn't take effect until 2011. So there's a two biennium lag before it would take effect.
And so, Steve, just so I know we all went through the orientation, remind us how this works outside the formula. So this money is appropriated outside the formula.
Mr. Chair, it's just handled like any other student weight in the formula. It's for the district that has a small elementary school or a small high school that qualifies, there's a calculation given the size and the number of grades involved, what that extra weight can be for that school. And then that is added to the regular student ADM and the other weights that are added to ADM to come up with a total weighted student count.
Okay, there was, and Senator Monroe, because I recall, and just want to make sure we had this drafted correctly, there were a few items that were outside the formula, right off the top.
Yes.
Transportation.
Right, that was the one is One is for the small high schools, but that's not dealt with in the bill. This is the formula small school component. And then there's also money off of the top for costs for state-supplied special education persons, for hospital education programs and long-term care programs. Mr. And that is not part of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Transportation?
Transportation, I believe, is... Well, I'll go to Steve. Senator Moreau has a question about transportation in terms of how it's dealt with in the formula.
Transportation is one of the four grants that isn't affected by the student weighted student count. So that's not part of the bill.
Right. But the question was, isn't transportation dealt with before pre-formula, basically?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, it's one of the grants in the formula, so it's the calculation is done in terms of the approved costs. That's all a given, but it feeds into the formula in calculating that transportation grant. The transportation grant is independent of the weighted student count. The weighted student count is in the general purpose grant calculation.
Yeah, okay. So I'm not crazy. It is, in fact, dealt with essentially before the rest of the money is calculated on weighted students.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, yes, before we know how much funds are available for that general purpose grant calculation, yes.
Transportation is paid ahead of that. Okay.
Senator Starr.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just appreciate the run that's included in our materials, and it clearly delineates the... shall we say the winners and the losers. And it would just be interesting to see the necessary 31 and 16 to move this bill with the numbers that are included in this run, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, runs are, and obviously this is just putting a sunset in 2011, but runs are always helpful to...
Certainly aids your district in mind, Mr. Chair.
Well, I will say this. No bill that's come out of Senate revenue has ever aided, in my time, the Beaverton, which has always been a tough one to take home on formula changes. So perhaps we'll keep the momentum going in that respect. Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for the opportunity. I had not intended on testifying on Senate Bill 550, but the circumstances just mandate that I do. I want to talk to you. I jotted down some issues that come to mind. And when you talk about Beaverton, Hillsboro, the growth schools in the state, they face a far different set of circumstances than the schools that receive the weighted formula. As a superintendent, and having been a superintendent for 25 years, I will assure you that when a superintendent went to look for a job, the choice of district was always a growth district. Growth districts present a whole host of problems. Will we have to build a new building?
We want the staff.
Will we have to add staff? Will we have to add curriculum?
I know.
Declining districts have a different set of problems. How will we make the average 40 courses that we offer a year continue for the students that we serve? I can tell you that the ratio in the large schools in the state is about 200 courses per school, and in the small schools it's 40 courses. What I'm saying to you is that there is a certain critical mass that you have to have before you have a school. Now, distributing money on an ADM formula is a perfect way to reach equity. But it is not a perfect way to guarantee that critical mass. There is an amount you have to have to open the doors. You have to have heat, lights, custodian, buses, which are part of the formula. All of those things have to be in there, and then you can allocate to the educational system. And it was with this in mind, I remember when the small schools calculation was put in, and it meant life or death. to those small schools. It will mean life or death at this time. And when we talk about life or death, let's talk about the kind, or let me tell you about the kind of schools we're talking about. We spent all of the interim, myself and 14 small schools, coining a term. And the term was remote and necessary. And it defines schools that can't readily be consolidated when you look on the face of it and just the numbers. One of those schools has 70 students, K to 12. But if you were to consolidate, the nearest school is 70 miles away, with geographic features that are impenetrable in the wintertime. And with 70 students, without that critical mass, you can't exist. So when we talk about the small school calculation, it's a way to provide. I guess what we're talking about is, what's the state's relationship to its children? Does the state have an obligation to educate all of its children? Or does it have an obligation only to educate those that happen to be born in a district that grows and has a certain number to it? I very passionately usually argue the issue and use such statements as an accident of birth ought not to give you a better education in one part of Oregon than it does in another. This small school correction helps make up for that remote and lonely school. We're not talking about opulence when we talk about this correction. We're not talking about adding anything. We're talking about very, very basic service level and how the state might meet the needs of those far-flung schools that simply cannot exist. As I told you, I remember, and I believe it was Senator Farioli at that time in his first term, was working very hard to get this small schools correction. And when we got it, I'm surprised that you don't remember the shouts of joy from around rural Oregon. It meant that much to us. It meant the difference between life and death. In fact, we're in that struggle again. It's interesting that you brought out the list of winners and losers. Because every school, when that list comes out, every school in the state goes to that list, and you find your place. And then you call your representative and your senator, and you promptly tell them what stand they are to take. We're losers on this list. You'd better fix that. The small school correction is some pain we've already gone through. And I would plead with you to let it stand.
Representative Down, and it is helpful because of your superintendent being a superintendent and a principal, and what we're realizing is that this was drafted, when we had the overview of the school finance formula, I think it was Senator Moreau and myself who said the two items that are outside the formula, and it'd be helpful for you if you would comment on that, because that's the, we didn't communicate to Steve Meyer well enough. We wanted the two items, and it's the small high school to have a five-year sunset on it. Not sure that's a new item towards you, if you want to, how you would feel about putting, and the only rationale for that was that we ought to have sunsets on and review whether this is a good item to have outside the formula. And 5 years from now, I think the sentiment certainly for myself was that that's something that we ought to come back and review, whether that should be outside the formula. And so, unfortunately, the draft you have in front of you is a sunset on, which to me, sunsets are never a bad thing, because all they do is just have folks come back and explain the rationale in the first place. But I think the amendment to this bill, if the will of the committee is that you would see just that small high school, a 2011-2012 sunset, so that folks would come back and
I'm going to shift from 25 years as a superintendent and 10 years as a teacher to 25 months as a legislator, and I never found a bill I couldn't comment on. I would want to go back and see, well, my inner superintendent voice says that would make me nervous that we were going to sunset that provision, but I did not come prepared to speak on that, Senator Deckert. I would still be a little nervous knowing that my life's blood was being tampered with, but that amendment would certainly be an improvement over what I read in this bill. But not something
that was
like
the sentiment that was expressed a few weeks ago. I believe it's $5 million, Steve, that is taken off the top.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's $2.5 million a year. And it's distributed to the small high schools based upon the number of students in the small high school as a percent of the state total small high school students.
Right. Okay, so that, well, that is the...
When you do the amendment, I'll come back.
Great, great. And I'll let me... Thank you. Appreciate your time. Any other questions for Representative Dowling?
Thank you very much.
Yes,
Senator Moreau.
You talked about geography. You talked about distance and the fact that some schools are small and have to be small. No choice. But there are other schools like Riverdale that is wedged in between. And it's a very, very wealthy district. Very wealthy people. It's almost like an expensive private school. And it's got Lake Oswego on one side and Portland on the other side, contiguous boundaries, that gets the small school break. Seems to me, you know, it seems to me that perhaps we ought to look at some kind of mileage measure as well as just the size of schools to determine whether or not they deserve this additional money.
I guess, Senator, that would be a point of reference thing, because the school I described to you was Fossil. Fossil has 70 kids, and Condon is not that far away. In fact, they share athletic programs right now. And athletic programs is one thing. I mean, if we cancel a basketball practice or a football practice, no harm done. We'll let you around here, I guess. But when we have kids going back and forth to class, we have a hole between Fossil and Condon that's pretty deep. So I guess it would be point of reference. I wasn't aware of that example, and as sharing your interest in that and wanting to make sure that that anomaly was truly fair, I would want to look at that. My point of reference is rural, eastern Oregon. In fact, as I said, we spent a lot of time defining remote and necessary schools. Remote was isolated and unable to consolidate. Paisley, we have a list of 20 of them. I wasn't aware of that one. So in that case, I would certainly want to take a look at that. And that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Perhaps it could be done on the amount of time that it takes to travel, you know. Say if the time differential is greater than an hour or greater than 45 minutes or something like that, then and the school is of a certain size, then it qualifies.
My recollection, and when the small school set aside was made, is that it was strictly distance, and I'm not sure that time was in that formula, and perhaps that bears some examination.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
thank you.
Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Good to see you again. Steve, do you want to talk a little bit about, since really the focus ought to be on the $5 million that's off the top, do you want to talk to the committee about the $5 million that comes off the top, where it came from, and when it was included in the formula?
Mr. Chair, let's see. I think it started two biennium's ago, and the argument was made that small high schools were having a difficult time providing the variety of courses that they would like to have, or even some of the basic courses that they needed to provide to their students. And so the argument was made that some additional funds was necessary for that, and I don't recall why it was put outside the formula rather than adjusting the calculation for small high school weights within the formula, but the reasoning might have been that it was seen as temporary, and the first biennium, it was just for that biennium. It was a permanent change initially. And then after that, In 05, I guess, it was made as a permanent part of the statute so that each biennium, that $5 million would be set aside for the small high school distribution.
Great. Chuck Bennett, Lori Wimmer Whalen, and Alan Tressider, and again, really the focus looking at an amendment, perhaps, that would just take that money that's off the top and put a 011, 012 sunset on it. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen of the Oregon Education Association. I'd like to say that you certainly got our attention by scheduling this bill this morning, which I'd like to call the Education Lobbyist Full Employment Act or the School District Closure Act. and grateful to hear that perhaps this isn't the bill we're here to talk about today. And let me just say very briefly, whenever we're talking about the distribution formula, you're going to see all of us coming up here because we feel that it's such a delicate balancing act on one hand. And you've heard all the arguments before about creation of winners and losers, and that run certainly demonstrates that when you had one school district, for example, that lost 96% of their funding, so I meant by School District Closure Act. But even the smaller changes may seem insignificant when they're small dollar amounts, to $2 million, $5 million, but understanding that in small districts, small amounts of money make big differences. So obviously we would urge you to proceed with caution. And on the other hand, there's also the argument that what we tend to do when we're looking at the formula is focus on how it's distributed rather than whether the amount that's initially appropriated is adequate. And I think that it's a distraction very often.
Lori, we're really focused on the small high school.
I understand that.
And understand that that's not... So that's really the focus, is not the formula itself.
I was speaking to that. To me, that is it's a part of the formula, even though it's outside of it. It's part of the distribution of the revenue that is allocated by ways and means. And assuming that we reach an adequate level for all districts, we probably won't be as inclined to play with the formula. With that, that's it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, thank you for the opportunity to testify on these amendments. I'm not sure I'm fully grasping them, but let me just make a couple of quick observations on it. For small high schools, it is only getting more difficult for small high schools, particularly with changing graduation requirements. And we'll testify, I think, in more detail when we actually see the amendments. But if there is any suggestion of trying to change that, we would be just very strongly opposed. I'm surprised to hear this is really not part of the formula. I think all of us thought, because of its statutory presence, that it really was. I'd ask you to have really two amendments drafted, one to create your sunset, the other to put this inside the formula so we don't go through this again on a regular basis. This is an important part of the funding for these small high schools, particularly in this changing and really more aggressive education environment. I mean, as you ask for multiple years of science, multiple years of math, et cetera, this just gets more and more expensive for big districts. The size of the district allows them to sort of, and I won't go very far with this, but sort of absorb these costs. For small districts, this can be devastating, trying, number one, to find the teachers that can do these classes and then pay them to come move to rural Oregon. So, or begin looking, and more likely looking for the kinds of alternatives, probably through virtual learning or long distance programs of some kind to accomplish this. I guess the other thought, and hopefully Mr. Tressider, who has more experience at this than I do, but I'm thinking back to the, because he's been around here so much longer than, but thinking back to when we had sunsets, and Senator Monroe will recall as well, when we had sunsets, on state agencies or small agencies, it was a lobbyist full employment act, which is fine. I'm getting closer to retirement, so probably not as exciting a prospect. But what it created was a political advantage for the for those who would close out these programs. For those being sunsetted, it was an extraordinarily difficult political problem to reinstitute their program. And I worry that from the vantage point of 5 years earlier, you would sunset a program, create the inherent disadvantage of being sunsetted for a program 5 years from now and the legislature that they face at that time. And as a result, I think reasonably the legislature has over time abandoned that approach. It sounded really good in the 70s. It didn't work out so well and created, I think, some real difficulties, some kind of mechanical problems for the retention of important programs. So I'd ask you to look again at the kind of the history of sunsetting and determine if that's really the way you want to go and create what is just essentially an inherent disadvantage for, particularly in this case, for small high schools. And so that'd be the end. Thank you.
Thank you. Just one question for you, Chuck.
Sure.
So and I remember at least, but very vaguely or somewhat vaguely, how we got to the small high school and kind of the bartering that was taking place. And I just remember seeing numbers kind of, how about 5? How about 7?
Yeah.
How about 10? Okay, 5, 2.5 each time. And so the thought to me, and tell me, certainly don't have a full understanding. I just remember 4 or 5 years back how it came about. The thought occurs is that you ought to have some sort of review of any, whether it's high-cost disability, because we just simply don't know what is going to occur in terms of medical advances. And the same is true of a small high school new introduction of a new program that perhaps the right word is not outside the formula. Maybe it's just off the top. But you ought to have some sort of, and that's, I think, why you do it in 4 or 5 years, to come back and say, is this still a really needed change and taking money before we distribute the formula? Is this still needed, and is it the same climate that we had 5 years ago when we kind of settled on this 5 million figure, or should it go up, should it go down, should it be eliminated altogether? I'd put that to Lori or you.
Mr. Chairman, I think inherent in the legislative process is that review. I mean, we're getting that review of high-cost disability every 2 years. We, as you pointed out, this is a program that came in within the past 4 years. It gets looked at regularly, and as it needs change, it certainly occurs. And we bring those bills, or you bring a bill that discusses these issues, or any other legislator at a future date. These issues get discussed. They get discussed in great detail every session. We're guaranteed we will have bills on the formula or elements that pertain to the distribution of funds. What we don't have, though, and this is what makes me nervous about a sunset, is the inherent disadvantage of it disappears unless you can affirmatively cause it to occur again in a piece of legislation. Sunsetting automatically closes it down. And that, I think, would be a mistake. I think perhaps, you know, if it was a way to statutorily say every 2 years we'll take a look at this and see if the level of it is correct or if the necessity of it continues to be as important as we thought it was 4 years ago or 2 years ago, fine. But we do that just by you all being called into session every other year and potentially now every year. There's just no question these issues get discussed and fully aired. But again, this sunsetting creates such an inherent disadvantage for the program that sunsetted. I think it creates from here, from this vantage point of 5 years, a negative for this program in the future. And I don't think that's what you're saying. I don't think you want to disadvantage small high schools in that future date. I think you want them reviewed. This puts them out of business, and the review is you got to recreate the whole magic of 4 years ago to get them back into. That's what I'm really concerned about.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Alan Tressiter, representing the Oregon Small Schools Association. As Mr. Bennett has so artfully pointed out, I am much older than he and was actually here in 1977 when we did Sunset Review, and so I won't repeat his history of that other than to say it does not accomplish what you want to accomplish. And as the legislative committee on revenue, you have the ability to review any program at any time you want, and you take advantage of that. And so I think institutionalizing a legislative sunset process does a great disadvantage to small high schools and anyone else that might be affected by that review. Small high schools, who I represent, are extremely disadvantaged right now when compared to many other schools in Oregon. The new graduation requirements are simply, we get a number of superintendents in a room trying to figure out how in the world they're going to comply with them, because they simply cannot without additional resources. There's just no, and even with lots of resources, they may not be able to. I mean, it's hard to bring two or three math teachers to some very remote parts of Oregon. Very hard to do. If you go east of the mountains, virtually all of their teachers come out of eastern Oregon or Washington State. It's very difficult to get people who graduate from schools of education in the valley to go east of the mountain. It's just, you know, if you want to talk somebody from Western into going to Pilot Rock or Ukiah, you've got a heck of a selling job on your hand. So we're trying to comply with all of the new rules and regulations of No Child Left Behind, of new graduation requirements. It is extremely difficult. The discussion of whether the $5 million small high school grant is inside or outside the formula. I mean, I always referred to the school funding formula. It's simply a way of getting money to districts. It's like bread is only a way to get butter to your mouth. I mean, the funding formula, whether it's inside or outside, is just to get money to districts. And so that point, I mean, I actually thought we got it in the formula last year when we statutorily did away with the sunset and put the high school, small high school correction money in the statute. If you want to review that, you can do that at any time you want, and I'll fill this hearing room with small high school principals and superintendents, and we'll have a discussion about it. But I don't think the move to make it go away in 4 years and then you come in and justify its reexistence is useful either to the small districts or particularly useful to you either. You can do that anytime you want, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for the panel?
Yes.
Senator Monroe.
I'm very sympathetic with the plight of small rural high schools that exist because they have to exist and that don't really have any other choice. I'm not sympathetic with Riverdale, which is Dunthorpe, which refused to join with either the Lake Oswego School District or the Portland School District, insisted on having their own very wealthy country club school, and we're giving them an extra $500,000. That troubles me. Comment?
Mr. Chairman, as long as they fit the definition of a small high school, then they qualify for this grant. If you want to discuss putting different parameters on that grant, you have the ability to do that. I would certainly want parents in the Riverdale district to have the opportunity to discuss that with you. But well, certainly, you have the ability to put.
I have followed that genesis through its classist, racist kind of a decision-making process, and it troubled me at the time, and it still does. I would like to see some reasonable parameters in terms of distance, something that would say, you know, your school exists, and it's not reasonable or possible to combine with another school. You have to be small, you have to be where you are, and then you need to get some extra support, because meeting the needs of students in those kinds of schools absolutely is something I sympathize with. But allowing what has happened in Dunthorpe and then giving them extra money troubles me.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Monroe, and my recollection of this is imperfect as well in terms of what happened 4 years ago when this bill passed. But I would ask you, and I will do the same, to go take a look at the record, because this was aired specifically regarding Riverdale and the history and a whole range of discussion occurred around this district trying to deal with the question at that time. I can assure you of that. I recall that part of it vividly because I was unfamiliar with the district and its history. So it has been discussed. Now, whether it was aired fully, I just can't recall how completely it was dealt with, but it has been on the table as part of this discussion in the past. So
per capita, it makes it, it's the wealthiest per capita area in the state by far.
They're very fortunate there.
It is not typical of the membership of the Oregon Small Schools Association.
And I absolutely understand that.
They're not a member of.
Yes, they are dues-paying members of the Oregon Small Schools Association.
Us too.
And of the Oregon School Board, so, and COSA. So, yes.
Yes, Lori.
Mr. Chair and members, 10 years ago I ran for office, and that was a part of my district. And I would just say that one of the things to consider is that we have a public school system in which even the affluent send their children to public school. And that's something to be very proud of in Oregon. And I'm not arguing with the points that you made. They're obviously very valid. But I would suggest treading with caution, even in that regard, and fairness always ought to be your guide, irrespective of the wealth of any particular set of parents, but just know going in that those students are public school students, not private school students, because we have such a great system in Oregon. And one of the things that happens when there's that kind of hint of class warfare is that you tend to chase some of your most vigorously supportive and present volunteering and donating parents out of the system. So it's just, you know, we don't want to kill the golden goose either. So it's just another little look at that whole issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I too also formerly represented Dunthorpe, and so this was always a struggle for me. And what I really came down to for me is we should be struggling to get all of the districts up to where Riverdale is, not try to bash Riverdale down.
I totally agree. Just the only question is, should you take $442,000 off the top before you even run and distribute? And that's the whole rationale. I think I understand. Y'all are committed to, if there's a formula bill, coming in and saying, don't change it. I think that is, and that's why I generally just don't enjoy these hearings very much. But to me, I will say, to me, that is why you put a sunset and you put it out there 5 years and you say, is this Riverdale the best use of $442,000? And not just to use that example, because and I realize Alan make a perfect point. We could do that tomorrow if we wanted to. I don't want to.
Okay.
But that's why you would put it out there, and that's why you do it on tax expenditures and other items, is you just kind of bring about a natural review process to say, is this serving the state in its best interest, or there's other uses?
Sure.
Thank you very much. Close the public. Any other thoughts, discussion? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 550. And that is it for today. We have Senate Bill 181 and Senate Bill 64 for Wednesday. And then for Thursday, we have Senate Bill 460, the gift card bill, and Senate Bill 39. Oh, so we've scheduled that, 39 for Thursday, and we'll see if there are any amendments.
The amendments will be ready by then.
Yeah, and Senator Monroe is not positive that we'll have amendments ready for that one on Thursday.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before you adjourn, could I have an opportunity to vote on Senate Bill 211?
Absolutely.
You need to suspend the rules.
Yeah, so do I need a motion to suspend the rules?
I move that you suspend first of all, you need to call a work session.
Open a work session on Senate Bill 211. Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chair, I move that I ask for unanimous consent to suspend the rules so I can cast a vote on Senate Bill 211.
Senator Barrick has moved to suspend the rules so that she may cast a vote on Senate Bill 211. Any objections to that? Senator Burdick, how do you vote?
Aye. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Close the work session.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Starting tomorrow, the committee that I chair on legislative reform will be meeting at 7:30 in the morning. And so I will still try to be here at 8:45, but if I'm a few minutes late, it's probably because I'm still upstairs finishing up the work of the legislative reform
committee.
So you
guys moved your time.
Well, we had to because we were meeting at 10:30, and that's floor session time now. So
that means you can't run, Senator Monroe.
Oh, yes, I will still run at 5:30.
We stand no competition here.
Yeah, here or here. We stand a chair.
7 miles.